Session 4, serving your new family. Recently, a survey was conducted over 1,300 kids to find out what they most wanted to do when they grew up. Top of the list, 22% just wanted to be rich. 19% wanted to be famous. 16% wanted to be police officers. 14% zookeepers. 13% firefighters. And 10% doctors. Now, nowhere on that list could you find the term servant. Actually, most of us aspire to be great, to have people look up to us. But according to Jesus, the greatest thing we can aspire to in life is to serve. That's what true greatness looks like. Well, we've been seeing that God has rescued us into his family. And two words sum up the attitude we're called to have towards our new church family. The first is love. We thought about that last time. The second is service. And this passage from Mark's Gospel will help us to see why serving one another is so vital. Mark chapter 10 from verse 35. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." "You don't know what you're asking," Jesus said. "Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." We see two ideas about what it looks like to be great. First, greatness according to the world. James and John, two of Jesus' disciples, have started to understand who he is, God's chosen king. And they think this could be their big break. And so they say, verse 37, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." If it was a prime minister's new cabinet, they wanted to be Secretary of State and Home Secretary. Well, the others hear about this and they become indignant, presumably because they wanted to have the most important positions themselves. And so Jesus steps in and he wants them to see that their ideas about greatness have been shaped by the world, not by him. Verse 42. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you." You see, greatness according to the world is all about being the most important and having other people serve you. So at work, greatness may be getting the promotions and having a team answering to you. Probably doesn't involve staying around to clear up after the office party. With our friends, greatness perhaps is having everyone crowd around us and listen to our stories. Probably doesn't involve spending time chatting to the oddball that others avoid. And this view of greatness from the world is the air that we breathe. And like the disciples, we too will be prone to thinking in the same way. And that's why, like the disciples, we need to listen carefully to what Jesus says about greatness. Verse 43, "Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." See, Jesus says that true greatness in his kingdom is found not in being served, but in serving others. And isn't verse 44 very comprehensive? Must be slave of all. And it's the verse 45 that gives us the reason why we should do this. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. That title, Son of Man, refers to a figure predicted in the Old Testament who would have all of God's glory and majesty. And yes, Jesus was glorious. He was God's Son. And yet even he came not to be served, but to serve. And that's why service must be the defining mark of a Christian. If it wasn't below even the Son of God, it certainly isn't below us. The Apostle Paul says in Philippians chapter 2, each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant. And did you notice that service begins with a change of our attitudes? When we talk about serving, it's easy to immediately think of it as an activity, something that I do. But the Bible goes deeper than our actions and takes us to our attitudes and our desires. Service, in other words, is a way of thinking. It's like a set of glasses through which we look at everything in life, always thinking, how can I put the needs of others above my own? How can I serve? Sometimes at church, how am I serving can end up meaning, what rota have I signed up for? Now, of course, being on a church rota is a valuable way of serving, but we must never reduce service to just a list of jobs I can tick off. Rather, it's an attitude that impacts everything I do in life. It was Jesus' basic attitude in life. Now it must become ours. So that's why we must serve. But once we grow in that attitude of service, what will my serving church family actually look like? Well, the answer is it will look different for each of us. We must all seek the same attitude, but how that plays out will be different because God has made us all different. That's our second point today, how to serve one another. And we're going to read some verses from 1 Peter chapter 4 and verses 10 and 11. Each one of you should use whatever gift he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. If anyone serves, he should do it with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power for ever and ever. Amen. First thing we see here is that God gives us gifts to serve others. He doesn't just give a few special people gifts. In verse 10 it says, each one should use whatever gift he has received. Every single follower of Jesus has been given particular gifts. Now these will include some natural abilities and some particular gifts that God gives us when we become Christians. And did you see what the purpose of those gifts are? Again in verse 10. We should use whatever gift he's received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various form. The purpose is to serve others. In other words, God doesn't just tell us to serve each other. He also gives us gifts to enable us to serve each other. And when it talks about faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms, it's a reminder that there are a wide variety of gifts. All of us will have a different set. And in the Bible, there are gifts of hospitality, administration, healing, encouraging, teaching, leading. And that's just scratching the surface. Now, it can be very easy to think at church, I've got nothing to give. But God has given all of his people gifts. It can also be easy to think, I could never do what that person does. But that's irrelevant. We're all meant to have different gifts and serve in different ways. Here are a few fleshed out examples then of what all of this might look like in practice. God has given Jim a real love of cars and a good brain for tinkering and fixing. So when someone in the church family has car issues, he offers a bit of time and advice to keep them getting ripped off when they take it for a service. God has given Jane a real gift for looking after kids. They just seem to click with her. And so she offers her services for helping with one of the kids groups. God has given Johnny great computer skills, so he helps out with the website. He's given Jenny a love of cooking, so she helps with the meals for Christianity Explored. He's given Jess one of those super organised brains, and so she offers to help on the admin team. He's gifted Joe as a teacher, and so he goes to Bible college and becomes a church leader. He's gifted James with a whole series of difficult experiences in life, so that now he's able to offer great support to those who are facing similar challenges. Now, of course, just because God gives specific gifts, that doesn't exempt us from that general attitude of service. You can imagine someone saying, "Oh, well, I'm afraid I don't have the gift of washing up." Of course not. And in fact, often the best way to work out your gifts is simply to throw yourself in, serving where there's a need, and seeing what seems to be the best fit as you go on. And who knows, perhaps that will be surprising. So God gives us gifts to serve others. We also see here that God gives us strength to serve others. You see, just because God's given us gifts, it doesn't mean that using those gifts is going to be easy. You know, just because God has given Adam the gift for chatting to folk, it's still slightly exhausting. And of course, it would be easier for him not to. And just because God has given Angela a head for sums, it doesn't mean that it will be easy to help with the church finances. Life is as busy for her as for anyone else. And that's why we need to realise that God doesn't just give us gifts, but strength to use them too. Verse 11 of 1 Peter 4 says this: "If anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. If anyone serves, he should do it with the strength God provides." Of course, it feels hard and costly for us to serve others, but it's as we get on and do it that again and again we experience God providing every ounce of strength that we need. And that means finally that God receives glory as we serve others. It can be really easy for our service of others to become a bit self-centred. So we perhaps serve others because we want people to see just how servant-hearted we are. You know, we serve, but we also want to make sure everyone knows about it. But we need to remember that it's God who gives us the gifts to serve. It's God who gives us the strength to serve. And so the only person who should receive the glory as we serve is God. And that's how verse 11 finishes. "So that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever." Well, that's God's vision for us then as a church family: loving each other, serving each other. But as we close, here are three practical questions to ask as you seek to grow in service yourself. Question one: who has needs in my congregation? Services is about people. Who are the people with needs that I could serve? Second question: where are there needs more generally in my church family? Perhaps there are gaps in particular practical rotas. And then the third question: how can I use my gifts to serve? What gifts has God given you, and how could you use those to be a blessing to other people?